I am a sea of love. 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 You are a sea of love. You are a sea of love. We are a sea of love. We are a sea of love. Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar, and I have some announcements to share with you about what's going on in the Womb Centered Healing Temple this summer 2021. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you'd like to receive announcements in an email form for each new podcast that comes out, as well as blog articles that are often related to the podcast topics, as well as upcoming courses and events, you can subscribe to the Womb Centered Healing Temple newsletter by visiting wombcenteredhealing.com. And I also encourage you, if you love this podcast, to please support it financially. You can subscribe financially through Anchor by making a monthly contribution of, you know, a small contribution. They start at 99 cents, you know, to really support this podcast and support the work that I'm doing to make all of this wonderful information available to you and inspire you to think about the womb as the center of your universe. Once again, return to that womb of wisdom that resides within you. So if that feels like something you want to support financially, that's how you can do it. Also, if you're interested in diving deeper into some of the topics and to really take a period of devotion in your life, devote some time and some energy in your life to deepening this practice of womb-centered living, I encourage you to take a look at the courses and workshops, and particularly the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship program that you can learn more about by visiting wombcenteredhealing.com. And there's a button up at the top of the page that says Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship. You can go there and listen to some introductory videos and look at the details of the program. And you don't have to do the whole 13-month program if you wanted to try out one of the 8 phases in the program. Each phase is about a month long. And I'm often sharing on the podcast and, you know, on these through the newsletter about the upcoming phases. So if you subscribe, then you'll start to get a sense of what the different phases are that are happening live throughout the year, but they're also available in recorded form, so you can do any of them at any time throughout the year to just dive deeper and really devote some time to discovering and learning about and reinitiating yourself into the power of the womb. So don't hesitate to visit the website, wombcenteredhealing.com, and connect in that way. All right, that's all for now. Enjoy the episode today. Thanks. Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. Well, no, actually, we're on the Womb Garden Podcast. But we may publish this one on both, because today we are talking about the Enchantress archetype, which corresponds to a bunch of different things. But first, I want to introduce my co-hostess, Manarda. Thank you for joining me, Manarda. I'm super excited to talk about this archetype, as the Enchantress has been a big part of my life for quite a number of years. This archetype, like, you know, when you look at the triple goddess archetype and how it corresponds with the menstrual cycle, for example, you've got the maiden at the beginning of the menstrual cycle, you got the mother at ovulation, and then you've got the crone at menstruation. Well, there's a big gap there, and an important gap between that mother energy at ovulation and the crone energy at menstruation, where a lot of stuff happens for people, PMS, big emotional stuff. And this is where the Enchantress comes in. And so for me, that triple goddess has become a quadruple goddess, because the Enchantress is such an important archetype for us to work with. And so, and that cycle kind of superimposes across the course of our whole life as well. If we look at how those archetypes play out in our lives, the perimenopausal phase is very much the Enchantress time as well. And there, because of this archetype being sort of hidden or in secret or in the dark or suppressed in our, you know, mainstream society, and for many generations, the powers of the Enchantress have been maligned and suppressed. Many of us have very difficult symptoms in our premenstrual phase and in our perimenopausal phases. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit today here with Manarda, and talk about herbs that are wonderful allies for this phase. So before I launch into my ideas about it, Manarda, I wanted to give you a chance to speak to some of the basic understandings that you have about this Enchantress archetype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to be here right now. I'm in this really gorgeous lake forest in Northwest Wisconsin. I reside on Anishinaabe land. This is still Anishinaabe land, a little bit different of micro ecosystems here. But you can hear the beautiful birds. There's two things I want to throw in now about looking at this. One is that I also am familiar with a five unit feminine archetype system that came from a book called Jailbreaking the Goddess. I don't remember who the author is.
I'm familiar with that book. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. And the piece that is exciting for me is because a lot of my work is about the seasonal aspects of the year and working with the cycles around the seasons of the earth, the growing seasons, the recovery seasons, the restorative seasons. So I'm excited about thinking about how the Enchantress fits in to a solar season. And for me, I think about that strong energy around the time of Samhain and how enchanting that time is for me, and the energy of the plants at that time of year, sending energy back into the roots. And so I'm wanting to talk a little bit about the spiritual energy of the plants and some of the plants that I understand as enchantress plants are toxic plants and underworld plants. ones that often I don't work with internally, but some are. Like Black Cohosh is one that I consider to be an enchantress that is a deep, deep, deep dark medicine. However, we do use it internally and very much for spiritual darkness, for emotional darkness, and for our dark vessel, right? Our dark womb space.
That's a great start. Yeah. And for me, the kinds of plants that feel important as well, in addition to these like shadow working plants that you're talking about, are the plants that nourish us in our creative flow and in our connection with spirit and in our connection with our inner guidance, and the protective plants that create safe space for us to feel all of the forbidden feelings. You know, oftentimes emotional processes are sort of cast into the shadow underworld realm of things, when in my mind, my wisdom guidance tells me that emotions are a vibrant part of life. And so is visiting the underworld, for sure. And so sometimes visiting the underworld is a part of the emotional processing, right? And many of the emotions that we relegate to the shadow side, the underworld, the darkness, really benefit from coming out into the sunlight. And we just need the safe space. And there's a protective quality of many herbs that fortify our own center, so that when we bring those difficult emotions into the light, and perhaps even share their wisdom with our loved ones, with our community, it requires healthy boundaries. It requires a strong sense of who we are and centeredness and groundedness and all of these things. And there's a lot of herbs that can really help with that, so that we can be integrated in our emotional wisdom and integrated into our lives, and not have to retreat and be in, you know, some, you know, different place by ourselves, but actually to bring that wisdom back into the world. So Persephone goes on the journey of visiting the underworld and coming back. Inanna goes on the journey of visiting the underworld and coming back. And they both bring the wisdom from the underworld into the world of the living, the growth world, all of those cycles. So integrating the wisdom of the enchantress phase into all aspects of our cycle is, I feel, a really important part of what we can talk about today. So I just want to start first by talking about how the enchantress, I mean, if we think about the enchantress and these journeys to the underworld, you know, the enchantress is, like you were saying, Monarda, just very ready to journey to the underworld, not afraid of that, and return and speak the wisdom that she gathered there. And this is one of the reasons why she's been so maligned and so hidden and kept suppressed and in secret, because oftentimes the wisdom that we gather from the underworld is very threatening to the status quo. And I just want to talk about that a little bit, because what I see going on with people that have disruptive premenstrual
symptoms or perimenopausal symptoms that are disrupting their life. What I see happening there, and I've had my own experience with this, I was in a phase of my life of big change and with a partner that I wanted to initiate a real shared life journey together. And it was the first time that we were really making big life decisions together in partnership. And, you know, I sort of let him take the lead with some like big, like location based, where were we going to live? What kind of work were we going to be doing? And tried out living in an area, in a big city area, which was close to his family. And it was very clear to me that this was not a long-term sustainable situation. But it wasn't clear to me at first. What was happening was that I was waking up every morning with screaming hot flashes. And these screaming hot flashes actually had words to the screaming that were instructing me where we needed to go and live instead. And I was like, wow. I mean, it'd be very easy to dismiss that wisdom. And I think maybe, you know, some people in perimenopause or in premenstrual, when they distress, it can be very easy to say, gosh, this is a really emotional, overly emotional response to the circumstances in my life. And it can be hard to sort out what the wisdom is in whatever emotional content, whatever voice is coming up in that situation. Now for me, you know, I had had many, many long years of self-reflection and, but also suppression included in that self-reflection of the, this kind of a voice, right? And so it was a big growth for me to, it would be very easy for me to dismiss that and start, like, as I went to a therapist and she was, you know, trying to tell me that it was going to be this 3-year journey of getting to the root of why I was feeling that way. That, and, you know, basically saying that those feelings were invalid. And that there was some root reason why I was having, you know, from my past that I was having these invalid feelings that were taking, you know, taking me off in a wrong direction. And that if I really wanted to heal, I needed to disregard that message and do this, like, you know, 3-year long stint of therapy with her. And I was like, or I cannot invalidate those feelings and follow the wisdom that's coming up for me. And, you know, which was a big shift because I had been receiving that kind of advice from my mentors for years to disregard that kind of inner wisdom and follow what they thought was better for me and not what my own inner wisdom was telling me. And especially if it had any emotional charge to it, that was the surefire way that it was to be invalidated, is if it had an emotional charge. And I said, you know what? What if my inner wisdom is just fierce? And, you know, is serious and is tired of being dismissed and invalidated and tossed to the side and told to shut up. So I made a big decision to listen to that. And you know, I asked my husband about it and he was like, oh no, we can't do that. That, you know, but I set the ball rolling anyway. He didn't want to talk about it. I set the ball rolling and I learned about planting a womb seed and how, and listening to your inner guidance and how that can radiate out and influence people without you having to say another word to them, especially a partner who is in intimate relationship physically with the womb, like a sexual partner. So I learned about that through that process, because pretty soon he was talking himself into my plan. Especially since he could see that that plan was happening for me, whether he was going along with it or not.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be there with it. So with me. And so, you know, it's, there's a moment when we can decide, you know what, this voice is important. This, even if it's got an emotional charge to it. Now, granted, there's, you know, discernment to be added into the mix. My message was very simple, very straightforward, and very clear. And it was, and it addressed all of my concerns. It was like, you know, there were a lot of problems at where we were at, and going to this other place was going to solve all of those problems very clearly, not only for myself, but for my husband as well. And it was going to be a better stepping stone than what we were trying to step on where we were at for us, for our next transition. There was a lot of wisdom in that. You know, we can have like emotional responses to things that don't contain that much wisdom, that aren't really clearly a clear and good path forward. And I'm not saying that we should just listen to any big emotional outburst and follow every emotional outburst that we might have. We do need to reflect on, is there really wisdom in this? But we've just been taught to out of hand to just dismiss anything that has any emotional content to it as unwise and not worth listening to. So I'm curious to hear your reflections, questions, personal experiences along the same.
Yeah. There's a lot there. I'm appreciating kind of being able to name and witness this these transitional spaces and times, because I think culturally we have an understanding of what I would call like the anatomy of a woman's or somebody with a womb's cycle. And while we have a name for like PMS or perimenopause, there's not a culture around holding space for that time. Mm-hmm. And when I think about my healing journey and the ways that I've made space for my inner wisdom time, it does feel like the time when I receive the most wisdom and guidance is in the transitional times. It's when big things are changing or when big things are about to change, whether it's in my body or in the world or in my life. And I've definitely noticed that when I experience more intense things physically or emotionally, those open up more capacity for me to receive messages that are more clear about my life or about ancestral wisdom. And that discernment process took me years. And I think it took me years mostly because I was having to battle culture, right? I was having to battle white supremacy within myself and within my community. I don't think that the process of learning to connect with our intuition has to take years. It also takes a lifetime, right? It's like something that we choose and then we're doing it until we choose something else. One of the technologies that I've started using to really support myself in gaining messages and in receiving messages, specifically when I'm not in a transitional lifetime, is using the V steam, the vaginal steam. I use that to help to clear my mind, clear my body, to make space for messages from my womb. And generally, I'm using that at transitional times during my cycle. I'll use it before I menstruate, after I ovulate. And so just noticing that isn't, you know, it's interesting and it's cool and it's fun.
Well, I just want to say about that during that time of my life that I was talking about, of needing to shift the direction and move location of where we were going to be, that I was introduced to vaginal steaming for the first time there and had my first self, you know, vaginal steam sessions after being initiated into it through a workshop with a wonderful teacher. And I feel like that what you just said is really true for me as well, that really helped me clarify and activate my womb wisdom and start to let it guide my life was the vaginal steaming. So I'm with you on that. What else were you going to say?
Well, can you hear me? I guess somebody's running a machine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Sounds fine.
Okay. That piece around discernment and discretion, for the last couple of weeks, I've been really in this reflective space about the culture of decision making and how in our culture, Western Americanized, you know, white supremacy culture, there's this myth that people are able to make decisions from rational places. And I think one of the things that I've just been realizing with this shift in COVID, where we were masked, we had learned how to be masked, and now it's like, okay, take the masks off, and now what are we doing? I'm just realizing that for most of COVID, most of us were not making decisions from rational places because we were not able to, and we were making decisions about how we were going to relate with people from emotional spaces, you know, like, yes, there's reason and rational thought, but ultimately the way that people landed on their decisions was very much about how that reason and rational thought sat in their bodies. And that's exactly my process of discernment is like, well, it could be that way and it could be the opposite. Right. I could have a sensation in my body and then come up with a rational thought about it, or use a rational thought and notice how my body feels to understand how to relate with that rational thought. And, you know, just to reiterate that, that this idea that humans, you know, Westerners are making decisions with reason is part of the story. And I think that humans are making decisions more from emotion than a lot of us acknowledge. And it's not problematic.
Right. It's not problematic. But it is problematic when we're in denial of the influence of our emotions and our, you know, indoctrination into certain ways of thinking about things, and which emotions are valid and which emotions are not valid,
right?
Which types of logical thinking processes, which kinds of things are qualified as logical, and which kinds of things are qualified as emotional. Like there's whole ways that certain lines of thinking or sets of information are disqualified based on socio-political power over domination dynamics in our society and historical who has more power, who's the biggest bully, kind of who wins the argument is who's the biggest bully, who can speak the loudest and the longest. And our political system is suffering from that as well. We could go into that, but let's steer back towards plants and the remedy for this and how we can inside ourselves, you know, I love what you're talking about of of feeling the body and validating that and feeling and listening to these voices. You know, we're taught to, so many of us, PMS is considered an automatic invalidation of any feelings, thoughts,
yes,
or ideas that come to us at that time, because it's just like, and it's so intrinsic to our mainstream culture that it's like a joke. It's like,
right,
she said what? Oh, she yeah. must be PMSing, right? And it's just such a blanket dismissal that most people just automatically accept. And so I feel like having support and having allies, whether it's human allies that and support that validates the wisdom and this enchantress archetype, and it can also be plant supports that validate and fortify our ability to have this discernment, to see clearly, to feel clearly, and understand our feelings, and have an integration between all of our centers of intelligence and wisdom. Yes. We've got the mental, you know, sort of the logical thinking brain, and we've got the logical thinking brain only makes up about 5% of our brain in mass and in physical space. The whole rest of the brain, 95% of the brain inside the head, is more the emotional brain, the dream type brain, you know, the senses, the sensory processing brain, all of that. And that's not, I mean, that can be integrated with the logical thinking brain, but ironically, what happens when we experience trauma is that there's a disconnect between the logical thinking brain and the rest of the brain, where the sensory input gets sort of shut off if it's too intense in a traumatic situation, where the emotional processing gets sort of pushed to the side because we don't have time for that. We've got to think our way out of this circumstance. You know, there's all kinds of ways that there's a disconnect from that part of the brain, but then the whole rest of the body is also part of the brain. Like, there's more brain matter in our belly than there is in our head. Right. So I talk about this so much that there's all this intelligence in our whole body and all of our sensory input, and we can reintegrate that, what you were talking about. And there's herbs that can really help us with that reintegration and you know, regulation of the fight and flight response.
Yes.
When we're in fight and flight mode, it affects how much of our brain is even available, what part of our brain we can actually be in touch with and listening to. And I think that, you know, certain herbs, but also certain herbal therapies like steaming, for example, or self-massage, topical, or even making a cup of tea, just the way that we treat ourselves with herbs, just the methods alone, regardless of what herbs are there, you know, making yourself a cup of tea and sitting down and drinking it and taking some deep breaths and having some time for reflection is an excellent way to start, you know, regulating the nervous system out of fight and flight mode. And then
you know,
there's specific herbs that do that as well.
Yeah. I want to reiterate that you're saying, and I, you know, also agree that, well, you're not quite saying this, but I want to explicitly say that the key is the two keys that we're talking about are slowing down and self-care. Self-care is allowing us to connect with ourselves. Mm-hmm. Slowing down allows the nervous system to shift potentially into from, oh God, and now I lost the words, sympathetic to parasympathetic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so there is wisdom in this, like, oh, when our hormones are out of alignment, it may not be a good time to make a decision, mm-hmm. right? Hormone dysregulation from PMS, hormone dysregulation from PTSD. Like, I'm just, as somebody who, mm-hmm. you know, has experienced that kind of hormone dysregulation, both kinds of hormone dysregulation, I'm just realizing right now, like, those feel so similar in my body. And the key for me was learning to slow down. So when there's hormone dysregulation in my body, it's time for me to slow down, to connect with my inner wisdom. The inner wisdom is trying to come up, and I can experience that. I can hear it, but it's not time to act mm-hmm. on that inner wisdom necessarily, unless it is time. And generally, if it's not an emergency, then it's not time, mm-hmm. a physical emergency. Mm-hmm. It could be an emotional emergency, but emotional emergencies generally don't need action. They need slowing down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like the plants, I mean, Tulsi comes up as a really, really great ally, mm-hmm. Both for the immune system, which is responding when we're in, the immune system goes into action when we're experiencing sympathetic nervous system, when we're experiencing, you know, hormone dysregulation, trauma triggers. And so the Tulsi will help us to, our immune systems to moderate. And it has gentle nervine qualities. It's a sacred spiritual medicine in traditional Ayurvedic medicine and in Indian culture. It's one of the goddess medicines.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
And a great combination herb with Tulsi, and you'll see this in the herbal tea segment of the grocery store, is Tulsi and rose go together really well. And I'm holding up the roses from my garden, and I'm growing both Tulsi and roses in the garden. And I was pointing to my teacup because I have Tulsi rose tea. Oh, there's some other ingredients in there too, but we'll also talk about, but the rose, roses in tea, rose petals, rose buds, rose tips, with including some of the leaves, have wonderful properties to really help our blood to move through the body and nourish us, and which is really helpful to regulate everything. You know, everything gets constricted when we're in fight and flight. And rose helps everything to relax and open up and get that blood moving again. And having our blood moving through us is so important, because when it's constricted, things can't be processed, right? And things can't be nourished. So that's one aspect of rose that I'd like to mention that's so supportive for what we're talking about. And then also the magical and spiritual energies of rose, the womb priestess, or the womb spirituality, womb-centered spirituality aspects of the rose are wonderful to evoke as we include rose in our teas. You know, the rose lineages, hearken back to the ancient womb priestesses of, you know, the Magdalene lineage, and prior to that, I feel like the Mary Magdalene was in training with the ancient African grandmothers, and so the connection with the rose and the womb is very long standing, and as we connect with the rose and receive her wisdom and her medicine, there's a deep wisdom that starts to be nourished inside of us. And that sense of the rose also teaches us about having healthy boundaries, like I was talking about. You know, the rose is often covered with very, very fierce thorns that say, you know, this is my space and you need to be respectful about me. And yes, I have this beautiful blossom that, you know, I'm happy to give you, but you need to approach me with care and you need to nourish me well, and you need to, you know, being a rose gardener, there's quite a relationship with the rose that I can go on metaphorically about what it means and what we can learn from the wisdom of roses. We could do a whole podcast just on roses. and I feel like we could do a whole series of podcasts on this, you know, as we're coming up towards the end of our time together here. I just want to speak to the fact we're not going to be able to mention all of the herbs in this podcast, but I think this Tulsi Rose combination is a great thing to bring into people's awareness.
I want to add that I have a tincture blend that's Tulsi Rose and Lady's Mantle.
Ah, yes, Lady's Mantle.
And I use that tincture blend when I'm feeling like dysregulation to help me to remember to feel pleasure. The message of this tincture is you can feel pleasure, right? It really is that simple. Like, pleasure is possible. It's amazing.
It sounds amazing. And you know, it makes sense that Lady's Mantle in that blend would really help bring that message through, because my sense of Lady's Mantle is just in the name. If you think about and the shape of the leaf, I think is why it was called this, but it also has this energetic of creating a mantle of protection around us that's also beautiful and frilly and soft and feminine, but it's this mantle of protection within which we can relax and feel safe and feel pleasure again. And fortifying our own sense of our own space, our own energy, our own sovereignty. And Lady's Mantle is so powerful in helping us to fortify the womb, tonify the womb, and you know, all of the processes of the womb, the hormonal changes and everything, just really nourishing all of that to be its fullness, right? Because sometimes we get dysregulated because certain parts of our cycle are cut short or undernourished or weakened for some reason or another, and so we get less of the hormones that are produced at that time. Or sometimes other parts of the cycle go into hyperdrive and we get more of the hormones that are produced at that time. So the ladies and that those responses can come from stress or trauma that's happening at different parts of the cycle, and even habit patterns of stressing out at that part of the cycle. And the ladies mantle just feels like this like beautiful cloak of safety that says, okay, it's okay for all parts to be fully nourished and fully developed and fully blossoming. Okay, you got me going on Lady's Mantle.
I know.
Well, we were going to wrap up, which is the...
I know. Let's do a part two next.
Okay, we will definitely do a part two. We can do part three, four. We can keep going because there's lots of other herbs that I feel like, you know, this theme is going to be the theme for me and for the Womb-Centered Healing Temple for the next couple of months. So all leading up to the Enchantress program. There's a 7-week Enchantress program starting in August that this conversation is leading up to, inviting folks to consider diving in. But there'll also be some shorter term, like little mini workshops leading up to that as well. So these podcasts will be little introductions. And then if you want to really dive in, you can join us for a workshop or a 7-week program. So
awesome.
Yeah. And perhaps Minarda and I will put together some kind of a workshop around herbs and the enchantment. So we'll have to have that talk, that conversation. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Alma.
Minarda, was there any last words of wisdom you'd like to share?
No. Nope.
We got it all in.
Feels all right. Good. Yeah. Part two coming. That's
Part
it.
Part two coming. All right. Thanks for joining us. And again, feel free to visit the website wombcenteredhealing.com and subscribe to the newsletter there. And you'll get announcements when the next podcast comes out if you haven't already done so. So that's all for now. Until next
time. Thanks.